I'm sorry that all I care about is money and using all the taxes for bombs to explode things. It's true, I must say, and it is sad, but I love the word explode. Beware, children. The Twinkies might get you. It's true.
I'm sorry, George Bush, but this is Violet Blue, and you're now listening to Open Source Sex. This is my regular podcast show that is being very, very graciously hosted and broadcast in some very interesting and possibly unsafe sexual ways across various types of non-consenting airwaves from NPR, which is short for Neighborhood Public Radio, and NPR can be found at conceptualart.org/NPR. Today, for Open Source Sex, I'm going to be talking with a friend, a colleague, and a coworker who is doing a lot of really, really interesting things around sex ed and sex education and sex therapy. And all of the things that I get incorrect about who he is and what he does, he's going to completely correct me because he's kind of toppy like that. His name is Adam Zimbardo.
Hey, Violet.
Hi. And there are some letters that go after your name. Is that correct?
There are a bunch of letters that go after my name. The most important ones are MFT, which is Marriage and Family Therapist.
Excellent.
Which is my clinical license.
Is there a doctor in front of your name?
There is no doctor in front of my name.
Okay.
I will have no doctors above me.
Above or below, behind,
yeah,
upside down, all of that.
Right. My degrees are in, have a degree in clinical psychology and a degree in human sexuality studies.
Excellent. And let me explain a little bit before we start talking about fun stuff, like diseases and things like that.
Ooh, diseases. Yeah.
I know. Very hot. The way that I met Adam, actually, is because I have been graciously invited to lecture at something called San Francisco Sex Information for the past couple of years. And San Francisco Sex Information, which the short acronym for is SFSI, and you'll hear us calling it SFISI, which rhymes with sissy. I don't know how SFISI feels about that, but that's just how it sounds when we talk about it.
We're secure in our gender.
You're okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay. So you'll hear us saying SFISI, and it sounds like sissy, but we're actually talking about San Francisco Sex Information. And San Francisco Sex Information is a nonprofit that has been around for how many years?
Goodness, founded in 1972.
Oh, my God.
So it's been a while now.
Oh, some of the people I sleep with hadn't been born yet. Oh, goodness. And what does SFISI do, if you don't mind explaining? I think you can explain better than I can.
Well, San Francisco Sex Information is basically a sex ed organization. We've been all volunteer for our entire history. And what we do is we talk to people about sex. We answer questions about sex. We used to do this mostly as a phone service. We have a switchboard that people have called into over the years. And increasingly over the last couple of years, we've moved most of that from phone to email.
Okay.
So there's tons and tons of sex ed information on the web, but one of the things that we do is unique is give people one-to-one answers.
What does that mean exactly?
People write us emails, and instead of having, for instance, here's our webpage with all of our information, they get an individual response. So somebody who is trained as a sex educator actually sits down at a computer and writes them back.
Oh, so they get an actual person to respond to them.
An actual person.
Wow, that's amazing.
An actual person.
So it's sort of like a help hotline for sex questions.
Yeah. The cool thing about doing it on the internet, though, is we used to be largely a Bay Area resource.
Mm-hmm.
And since we went to email, we're getting questions from all over the world.
Wow.
Because it doesn't cost anymore to email us from the Middle East, from South America.
Do you get emails from those countries?
Absolutely.
From those places? Wow.
And that's a really cool service.
Definitely.
Because it's one thing to provide sex ed for people in San Francisco who are essentially inundated and bathed in sex ed messages constantly.
You're soaking in it.
But quite another thing if you're from rural India.
Right.
And what's your access to sex education? Not so much. So to be able to be somewhere really isolated, rural India or rural Iowa, to be somewhere really isolated and be
Square
able
state,
to...
Square state, Middle East.
Be able to do... to specifically get your questions answered one-to-one is, I think, an amazing service.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you've been teaching and training at SFISI for how long now?
Oh, God. 16 years.
Holy cow.
I started at SFISI in 1990.
Wow. So have you been working one-to-one with people that entire time, answering their questions?
Decreasingly in the last couple of years.
Okay, but you do work a lot with the students, training them to work on the front lines.
Yeah.
I see you doing that, so you can't deny it right now.
I do that sometimes.
I've seen it.
Yeah, Sfisi has been kind of a passion of mine since I first got involved all those years ago. I was originally found out about Sfisi through Queer Nation. I was a queer activist in San Francisco back in the day.
Oh, wow, cool.
And discovered this thing, this organization that was doing this amazing thing, this free sex ed, actual non-judgmental sex information. That's kind of a different thing than most sex ed out there today.
Okay, now explain the non-judgmental sex ed, because I think one of the things that has attracted me to working with Sfisi is that it is non-judgmental sex education, and a lot of people don't understand that that's different from the other types of sex education that can be found in other teaching institutions. Do you have comments on that?
I do have a comment on that, which is this is the thing that Sfisi does that's really different from any other sex ed organization. Other sex ed messages come with an agenda. If you go to Planned Parenthood and ask them about sex, their agenda is quite explicitly to get people to use birth control.
Okay.
If you get sex ed messages from the Department of Health, their agendas are around people not transmitting STDs.
Okay.
There are various advocacy groups for various communities that have various agendas around what information they want to put out there.
Mm-hmm.
And our agenda is just to be accurate.
Oh, that's it.
Which is really quite different. We're not trying to get people to behave differently. We're not trying to get people to conform to our ideas of what their sex lives should look like. We're just trying to get information out there to the public.
Wow. Okay. So you don't care who they are or why they're asking, but you just want to make sure that they get the right information. Do you think that's right?
I think that's absolutely correct.
Okay.
And that shift, you know, to move away from we're trying to hit this demographic or we're trying to get this message to people to get this behavior change,
mm-hmm.
That to me is tremendously important. That's something that's been really missing in sex ed. You know, when we have in the last 10 years or so had this huge proliferation of sex education messages and mm-hmm. STD messages and sexual health messages, but they've all come with agendas, and
right.
they've come from organizations with agendas.
Now, because you have a pretty non-traditional way of approaching sex ed, because I think a lot of people, when they come to sex information or sex ed, they expect a certain structure or a certain form to fit their specifications. Do people, like, when you're teaching people to talk to other people on the phone, because basically you educate educators.
Right.
Have you ever had any students in class kind of freak out about the kind of stuff that you talk about? Because you talk about everything from, like, you know, from you know, just plain old heterosexual in and out sex and the mechanics therein involved, all the way to anal fisting and blood play fetish and snot fetish. You even have people come in and lecture about topics like necrophilia and things like that. Has anyone ever just, like, gotten really upset or wigged out or...
Well, you know,
like
certainly people have all kinds of reactions to the material we talk about. And one of the things that we like to stress very heavily is it's okay to have a reaction.
Okay.
It would be unusual for somebody to be able to really talk about any kind of sexual behavior and not go, ugh, at some of it. We all have that. We all have our positive and negative reactions. Oh, that's really, ugh, that freaks me out. Or, mm-hmm. wow, that's really hot. There's a difference, though, between having a reaction and a judgment.
Okay.
The reaction is what you're feeling. Wow, ugh, that's really intense. You know, necrophilia, that's really creepy to me.
Yeah.
The judgment is different. The judgment is, that's wrong, you shouldn't do it.
I see.
That's wrong, and you're a bad person for doing it. That's wrong, and that behavior is not okay, and it should be forbidden, it should be sanctioned, it shouldn't happen. That's a judgment as opposed to a reaction. So,
gotcha.
Reactions... we encourage
okay.
people who, in fact, people generally who come through our training who have the most difficulty are people who come through saying, oh, I don't have any judgments.
Oh, really?
I have no problems. I'm good with every kind of sex.
Uh-oh.
Oh, really?
Oh, no. Is that like a warning?
Well, it means that they're in for a rockier ride.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Folks who come to us and say, like, you know I've got my stuff and I'm working on it, you know, mm-hmm. and I have some reactions and there's stuff that I like a lot and stuff that really freaks me out. That's somebody who's much readier and more able to deal with the reactions as they come up than somebody who says, oh, no, I'm sex-positive, San Francisco postmodern kind of guy or gal.
Uh-oh.
and I don't have any values at all around sex, and I don't have any reactions. Nothing squirts me out. That person is going to find out about their buttons. And hopefully is going to find out about them in a safe space, in
yeah.
a place where it's all right to freak out.
True, true. That's true.
The really unfortunate part is when you find out about your buttons as you're doing one-on-one sex ed with somebody who really needs your help.
Oh.
And brings something into the room that flips you out.
Wow.
And then either you go, you know, ballistic on them and tell them they shouldn't be doing that, that's wrong, that's evil, that's bad. you know, or you melt down and have all of your reactions at once. So I really encourage people to be very in touch with their reactions and to accept that they have reactions,
right,
as opposed to trying to suppress those.
So you basically are giving educators sort of the tools to be able to help deal with their freakouts and not saying, don't freak out.
Absolutely. Permission to have your responses is kind of the first thing. You know, we talk a lot in sex ed about permission, you know, permission to feel, to be turned on to what you're turned on to say yes, to say no.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really important to extend that permission, not just to our clients, but to sex educators too. You know?
Right.
Hey, it's okay to have your feelings.
Cool.
That's normal. That's healthy. If you didn't have any feelings, I'd be worried about you.
Yeah, right. That's why it's a person talking to you, not a robot.
Absolutely.
So another question I have is, of course, and I've actually always wanted to ask this of someone at SFISI, but I've never gotten a straight answer. And that's that, have you ever had some, like, what are the weirdest calls you've gotten? Like, and then also I want to ask you, because people, okay, I'm totally going all over the place. But first of all, people totally call you guys and they're like, I have a light bulb stuck in my ass, right?
Doesn't happen all that often, but it does happen sometimes.
Okay, so what do you tell them?
We tell them, get you and your ass to the emergency room as soon as possible to get somebody to pull that light bulb out of your ass. And often that's paired with some sort of education about what is not a brilliant thing to stick up your ass, like a light bulb, for instance. For various reasons, light bulbs are not ideal.
Have you ever had to talk someone through having something stuck in their ass?
We generally will try to get people in touch with the, shall we say, medical community once they have something stuck inside them. That's really not the best thing to try to do over the telephone, you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
That's something you want to do one-on-one. One of the things that people are very anxious about when they get into some kind of situation like that is they think that they're going to go down to the ER,
mm-hmm,
and this doctor's going to see them, and the doctor's going to freak out,
right?
And is going to, again, go ballistic on them.
Right.
And
his reaction.
Gotta say, man, ER docs are some of the coolest people in the world around removing rectal foreign bodies.
Wow.
This is something that every ER doc has done once, twice, 100 times.
Wow.
So the docs often, you know, you're not going to get a huge amount of props and praise for sticking something really silly up your asshole and getting it stuck there. But ER docs have seen it all. So a lot of our intervention there is talking people down from their anxiety and
getting
saying,
them off the ledge.
You know, hey, would you rather have this light bulb in your ass for the rest of your life or suffer some minor shame and have somebody pull it out with a pair of tongs?
Good point. Good point.
But no, we sure try not to do that over the phone. Just the process of sort of describing. So, you know, do you have salad tongs? Salad forks? What do you got? A hemostat? You know, do you have anything that you could put? I wouldn't go there.
That's probably a really good idea.
Really a time when we are very conscious about our boundaries and what's within our scope of practice. And pulling things out of your ass when they're stuck there is really more of a medical issue rather than a sex ed issue.
So you know where your boundaries are in
absolutely
those terms. What are
teaching
more
people what a good thing to stick up their ass is and isn't, that's within our purview. But actually pulling it in once they've made a poor decision around that, that's somebody else's job.
Excellent. So what are the more common questions that you would get at SFISI?
You know, a lot of the questions we get are either, well, first I should say we get a hell of a lot of questions as we've shifted from phone to email. We've gotten our client base has gotten a lot younger. So we get a lot of questions from teens, from people who are just starting to experiment with sex, who are having sex, you know, for the first couple of times or having their first relationship.
Right.
And those folks, we are living in a country right now where sex education is, shall we say, not at its peak.
Really?
So,
especially for probably minors, I'm sure.
You know, basically, people who are growing up right now are so terrified that they're going to get either AIDS or pregnant. Those are kind of the big two. They're really taught from day one of sex ed. That's what drives sex education is trying to get, again, get back to the question of agendas.
Mm-hmm.
The agenda of keeping kids from having sex or keeping kids from getting STDs or getting pregnant is so strong that the vast majority of sex ed messages are about, hey, you know what? If you do it, you're going to die.
Right. So they're learning about sex by proxy of shame and fear rather than anyone saying that it could also be about pleasure.
Well, and they're also getting wildly exaggerated messages about how dangerous their behaviors are.
Wow.
Both in terms of pregnancy risk and STD risk.
Wow.
We've got, you know, the classic end of the continuum question on this is we have teenage girls who are writing in or calling in and are saying, you know, my boyfriend and I jacked off together and I got a little cum on my leg. What are the odds that I'm pregnant?
Oh, no.
So, you know, we have this kind of... The sex ed message is if you do anything that gets any semen anywhere near a vagina, there's going to be pregnancy.
Right.
And if you get any body fluid near any other orifice, there's going to be some kind of STD.
Right.
And even if you're both HIV negative, if you have sex, you're going to get AIDS.
Okay.
So that's kind of that's the cultural background noise of sex ed that needs to be worked with. That's kind of where generally folks are coming from.
And you're doing private practice now with therapy, correct?
That's correct.
And so because what I'm thinking of is that we were having a discussion a little bit earlier about harm reduction. So this actually ties into, am I right, a little bit of what you're talking about when you talk about harm reduction? Because
well, yeah.
If you could explain harm reduction too, because I'm a little fuzzy on that one.
For background, a lot of the work that I've been doing as a therapist, both I've been working in HIV mental health for the city and county in various agencies.
Mm-hmm.
Here in San Francisco, yeah. And also doing private practice stuff. A lot of what we do, a lot of the people that we see, certainly through county mental health, are people who are using drugs, active drug users.
Okay, like IV drug users or speed?
A lot of them are IV drug users, people who are shooting speed.
Wow.
You know, a lot of people use all kinds of different drugs.
Yeah.
We live in a town where drug use is quite prevalent. So harm reduction, the original, the folks who created the harm reduction model, working with IV drug users and saying, well, you know, we have this just say no model, which is don't take drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to also recognize that people will take drugs. And how can we reduce the harm from that?
Well, that's kind of like what's going on with some of the stuff with kids that you're talking about. People are saying,
absolutely.
Don't have sex. Just don't do it.
Don't have sex.
Right.
The Nancy Reagan model of human sexuality.
Yeah, totally.
Just don't do it. If you do it, it's bad. And one of the things that is important to recognize is, hey, you know what? Teenagers have been having sex. Over evolutionary time.
You know? Yeah, totally.
Since we were in the trees, teenagers have been having sex. But that's not really going to change because, you know, the government or the Republicans or the DPH says that's a bad idea.
Right. And people
that's going to keep happening.
Right. And people are also not going to stop doing drugs because they're being told not to.
People are not going to stop doing drugs. One of the unfortunate things that happens both in substance abuse work and in sex education is we have a tendency to repeat messages that haven't worked.
Like what?
Well, like, stop taking drugs.
Okay.
You know, by the time somebody walks into your office with a drug problem, that person has heard stop taking drugs from their parents, their partner,
right.
Their friends, people at work. Anytime you turn on TV, there's the Law and Order with somebody who, like, started experimenting with drugs and ended up being a serial killer. There's
they
no shortage.
They a little
of...
bit of pot and, like...
Next thing you know, they're on the streets shooting heroin and killing people. So, you know, repeating the message, hey, you know what, you should really stop. Is really not all that helpful.
Yeah.
It's especially not helpful to people who don't want to stop.
Yeah.
Those folks are going to tune out your message. And I think that's...
It's really nice to hear that from an educator for a change.
That's the thing that comes... That really translates well across into sex ed.
How's that?
Is doing harm reduction work around sexuality. People are going to have sex.
Right.
If we start from that position, it makes us a lot stronger than if we start from the position of saying, well, you know, people shouldn't be having sex and we have to teach them not to have sex.
Right.
A little further up that continuum is talking about HIV transmission. I've been working in HIV mental health and AIDS prevention for many, many years. And up until quite recently, the only message that we had two messages around HIV prevention. Message one was don't have sex at all.
Okay.
I think we've kinda already gotten
helpful.
that doesn't work super well.
Right, right.
Message two was, well, if you're going to have sex, cover yourself in latex and cover your partner in latex.
Right, from head to toe.
And any fluid exchange is a bad thing.
Okay.
And that message also is not a super helpful message to keep repeating.
Are you finding that people just aren't doing it?
Of course.
Oh.
tell you, this is actually the subject of some of my graduate research. 80% of Americans did not use a condom last time they had sex.
Wow.
80%.
That is a lot. That's 8 out of 10.
That's 8 out of 10. One of the things that's fascinating about that is that it, when we put together the kind of social marketing campaigns we've been doing for the past, say, 20 years in HIV prevention, one of the goals of social marketing is to present sex with a condom as the norm and sex without a condom as sort of a deviation from that norm.
Okay.
When in fact, that's the opposite of the actual reality that's out there. The reality out there is people don't use condoms most of the time and sometimes do. And great when they do, but let's acknowledge that 80% of people who don't and try to look at what we can do with them other than tell them again to use a condom every time.
Right. So what do you do? Like, what do you do with the people that just aren't using condoms? Like,
well, you know, there are two answers to that.
Okay.
You know, three answers, maybe.
Not easy ones, I'm sure.
You know, what do we harm reduction sex ed therapists do? What do we as a society do? And what do people in other parts of the world do?
Oh, God,
those are kind of radically different answers.
Definitely.
The big picture is sort of culturally what we do is we try to find new ways of giving people the same message again.
Right.
You know, the message is use a condom. And if you're not using a condom, the assumption is that somehow you failed to get that message.
Okay.
Of course, that's not true.
Yeah.
The Kaiser Family Foundation did a nationwide study found that more than 99% of Americans know that HIV is spread through unprotected sex and have, you know, a fair, if not hair-splitting, idea of what that means.
Okay. So it's safe to say that pretty much everybody knows that, then.
Everybody knows that, and yet people continue to have unprotected sex.
Okay.
And the just say no variant here in prevention has been, well, those people really need to change their behavior and start using condoms.
So it's sort of, they're almost like behaving like they don't exist.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And if they do exist, it must be that they just haven't gotten the message yet. So we're going to try to tell them more and again. So, you know, when you have a population where 99% of the people have already gotten the message.
Right.
And you're spending an enormous amount of your prevention money and energy and time repeating that message, that's largely wasted energy.
So, saying that, do you find that coming from that perspective, do you find yourself in conflict with other sex educators over this issue?
Well, occasionally. Mostly
because so many, like, I mean, just the, some of the culture that I've come up through in sex ed is, you know, it's all like, you know, wear a condom, wear a glove, you know, wrap saran wrap around your head, you know, before you even get near like an open pore or anything like that.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of a different, to me it makes sense, but it's a shift in perspective that I think that people might have some animosity toward.
Absolutely. Well, and it's the difference between kind of top down and bottom up theory, so to speak. The top down message has
finally
always been,
you're flirting with me.
The top-down message has always been just use a condom every time, when in fact people on the street are not doing that.
Right.
So it can lead to conflict if you acknowledge that people on the street are not doing that.
Right.
And that just telling them to do it again is not really that helpful an intervention. A lot of people have a big, huge button around unprotected sex.
How's that?
That folks who really have been invested for a long time in use a condom messages are very freaked out by the idea that people are still having unprotected sex. Those of us, you know, guys of a certain age in San Francisco lived through the, you know, the real peak of the epidemic when a lot of our friends were dying.
Right.
And really,
and some of our friends are still dying. So
I've got some post-traumatic stuff around, you know, not using a condom is basically killing people.
Right.
And if that's your experience, if that's where you've come from, it's very hard to talk about non-condom prevention methods.
I bet. I deal with that a lot when I review gay porn and when I talk to gay porn stars and I hang out with people who do gay porn, because there's the whole barebacking culture and the very, very violently anti-barebacking culture. And so it's really a weird line for me, because in straight porn, they never use condoms. Mm-hmm. They never even acknowledge, you know, they never even behave as if anyone has anything.
Yeah.
Whereas in, you know, by and large, in what's accepted in gay porn, they are supposed to behave as if each other are already infected, and they don't, you know, they don't ejaculate on any open areas and into any holes, into any eyes, you know, uh-huh. into any mouths or anything like that. It's all pretty, you know, safe. But then, you know, we've got some, you know, a couple of production houses here in town, for instance, like Treasure Island Media, where they do a lot of barebacking porn. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, you know, this section in the porn store that no one wants to be seen in, and
right.
yet it's like
right.
one of the most popular sections in the porn store. So it's like this huge divide.
Well, I think what you've hit on there, which is really important, is that nobody wants to be seen in that section.
Yeah.
That all those guys who are out there, all those couples, all those straight folks who are out there having unprotected sex, don't talk about it because it is so stigmatized.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
There's so much judgment and opprobrium against unprotected sex that, you know, it becomes this underground thing. You know, we go to
right.
the secret barebacking section.
Exactly.
And get
exactly.
the porn where they're not using condoms and telling us about safe sex again.
Totally, totally. And that's a lot of where the down low movement or movement,
sure.
the down low subculture ties into as well.
Sure.
So what do we do, Adam?
Well, what do we do? Goodness. The first thing that we really need to do is acknowledge that people are doing this behavior and that people are going to continue to do this behavior even though they know that they should. I'm using air quotes. I don't think
yeah.
that comes across on the podcast.
I'll take a picture of you doing them later and put it on the file.
You know, streaming video of me doing my air quotes. People should be using condoms, but don't always. So if we start from saying that
mm-hmm.
and start from saying, wow, you know what? Actually, most people don't.
Yeah.
Most sexual acts do not involve condoms. How can we help those folks? How can we help them to take care of themselves? How can we help them reduce their risk without going to condom use? Because a lot of people just aren't going to do that.
Right.
So there's all kinds of sex ed that can really incorporate non-condom prevention. A lot of research has been done over the last couple of years. Great research has come out of Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Reasonably good research has come out of Europe. Very little research has come out of the States.
Oh, I'm shocked.
You know, Australia, since the start of the epidemic, Australia has been teaching that oral sex is a much lower risk activity than
really?
Anal sex. And that, you know, hey, if you're going to have sex, have oral sex and don't worry about the condom.
Okay.
Australia, since the early 90s, has been saying, you know what, if you're HIV negative and you have an HIV negative partner...
Mm-hmm.
Let's acknowledge that you're going to have unprotected sex and go get tested and talk about it together. The public health message there is, what is it? Talk, test, and trust.
Oh, wow.
That's a radically different message than you would give people in San Francisco. In San Francisco, the message is talk, test, and don't trust.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly.
Talk, test, and when you know that you're negative and your partner is negative, don't believe him because he might be cheating on you.
Right.
So there's a problem there because, of course, one of the things that I used to do some years ago, I worked for AIDS Health Project in a research study. And I used to go in and do interviews with guys who were at high risk between the time when they got their test and the time they got the results back.
Oh, wow.
There used to be this 14-day period between
right.
you get your test, you get your result. And we were testing cognitive behavioral interventions. So I'd go and do like 2-hour interviews with these guys.
Holy cow.
And we'd talk about what happened and their high-risk activity and their behavior and their decision-making processes. We'd talk about, you know, were they using substances? What was the person like? What kind of context was it? And I started asking at the end of the interview, what'd you tell a test site counselor? And 9 out of 10 times, these guys would say, oh, I told them the condom broke. What?
Really?
You know, why did you do this? I said, well, we didn't want to get the same lecture again.
Oh.
So here are guys who are having these really rich and complicated decision-making processes, some of
right.
which were, you know, reasonably good processes, some of which are quite bad processes.
Right. But they were a process nonetheless.
They weren't reporting any of that to anyone because they'd already gotten that lecture 100 times.
They didn't want to get the lecture again. Exactly.
So one of the things that really, you know, that's a fascinating difference between kind of a harm reduction policy around safer sex and kind of an American model, you know, just say no to unsafe sex.
Right.
Is how could we talk to people who are having unprotected sex and help them make better decisions?
Right.
That maybe don't always involve using a condom. That's terrifying for a lot of people to think about.
It is.
There's
absolutely.
A lot of, you know, there's...
Because you're still telling them to have sex.
You're still telling them to have sex. You know, and one of the things that happens is that as you stigmatize unprotected sex more and more and more, mm-hmm. people talk about it less and less and less. And so the only people who are still talking about unprotected sex are kind of loony.
Yeah, right.
I mean, like, let's open that up and say, like, you know, the folks who actively talk about barebacking in national media are not always the healthiest, sanest people.
Really?
You know, because healthy, sane people have learned that you don't talk about that.
Right, exactly.
You know, you do it at home, and then you advocate 100% safe sex 100% of the time. Do you remember back in the 90s, I used to have one of these buttons. We used to have these buttons that said 100%, meaning I'm having 100% safe sex. I had one of those buttons, and I sure as hell wasn't. And nobody I knew who were working with test sites was having 100% safe sex. But we had those buttons, and we gave our 100% safe sex message.
Sure, sure.
But, you know, that was one of the big secrets is, you know, we'd come in and talk to each other at the test sites, and, you know, we were having unprotected sex all the time while we were giving that message of, you know, oh, my God, really, you know, don't trust your boyfriend. He might be out cheating on you. There's problems. You've got to use a condom every time. And if you don't, there's something terribly wrong with you.
Right, right. Wow. Well, thank you so much for kind of coming out on that topic for all of us. Well, for all of us educators, too, because, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, as an educator, I, you know, have definitely spent my share of time running around saying, you know, play safe, be safe, do safe things. But at the same time, you know, I traffic in erotica where no safe sex is ever, you know, in practice. Yeah. And what I do in my own life is often quite different, you know, and alcohol impairs my judgment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I really, really appreciate that you have that kind of honesty.
Yeah, amen. You know,
we're finally starting to talk about this stuff because we really need to.
If there's one message that I would want people to get, it's that this is something that happens all the time. And if we talk about it and take away the judgment and the stigma,
right.
it's something we can really learn a lot more about.
Yeah, and I think that we can be healthier.
Absolutely.
Just not only as a culture, but physically as a result
Absolutely.
Of it, for sure. Well, thank you so much for coming on Open Source Sex
Violet,
today.
It has been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you.
I'm
and your website is?
Oh, my website is www.adamzmft.net.
.net?
.net.
Cool.
So people who want to reach me, welcome to drop me a note.
Excellent. And I will, I'm going to get all over that QuickTime video of you doing the air quotes. So that
Excellent.
I can attach it on the end of this podcast. And I want to thank Neighborhood Public Radio very, very much for hosting us today. That is conceptualart.org/NPR. And thank you very much for listening to Open Source Sex.
And a general standing ovation in honor of the late Coretta Scott King by members of both parties on both sides of the aisle.